I honestly don't know. There's magic bound to it. As a mage, I suppose I'm naturally drawn to magical items. Isn't it the same as your kind? Gideon remained on the ground with his legs crossed. I can feel it, Gallinor admitted, eyeing the sword. It's from a time before either of ours. Not that I wouldn't like to give it a try. Gallinor fixed his grip around the red hilt and pulled. The sword didn't even wobble in the stone. Gideon quietly chuckled to himself. I told you about the spell Galandavax placed over it. Just making sure I'm not a Dragorn, Gallinor said with jest. Have you not tried it? The sword? Why would I? I'm not even an elf, let alone a Dragorn. Gideon had wanted to, but found his attention entirely stolen by its mere appearance. Well, come on then, Gallinor bade, wiggling his arm on the hilt. What else is there to do? There was a bitter tone to his question. Gideon sighed and stood up to face the sword. Its red and gold hilt was of the finest craftsmanship, and incredibly cool to the touch. One by one his fingers wrapped around the grip, and the magic contained within ran up his arm, promising great power. The mage adjusted his grip at the last second, and pulled with all his strength. Nothing happened. I told you it was pointless. Gideon released the sword. Gallinor waved the notion away. What would you do with the sword anyway? You're as likely to stab yourself as anyone else. The elf laughed, though it was clear he was trying to goad Gideon. You want to test your blade against my staff? Gideon retrieved the staff from his back and mentally commanded it to grow to its full length. I feel obliged to remind you that I choose to fight with swords. I am still an elf, of 400 years no less, and therefore still your better in the magical arts. Prove it, Gideon replied with a cocky smile, before running at the elf. Don't say I didn't warn you. Gallinor began to slowly pull his swords free of their scabbards, when a blinding light formed between them, followed by a concussive force strong enough to launch the pair in opposite directions. When Gideon opened his eyes again, he was flat on his back at the foot of the rock containing Mournblade. Gallinor was in a similar position on the other side of the clearing, with his chestnut hair covering his angular face. Both of their weapons had been lost in the tumble, and now lay at Adriel's bare feet, by the edge of the clearing. If you must use your time this way, please do it elsewhere. Adriel looked at Mournblade, as if it were a religious relic. Apologies, Adriel. Gideon stood up and brushed the grass off his trousers. Adriel watched Gallinor rise from the ground. Your actions against Maliath could have cost not only your life, but that of Gideon's, Ilargo's, or any of the other dragons keeping watch. Keeping watch? Gallinor spat back. He doesn't need watching, Adriel. He needs unleashing. He's got 1,000 years of rage trapped inside him. Let him take us to Malaesai and rid the world of the Darkerkin once and for all. I grow tired of this discussion, Gallinor. Adriel moved further into the clearing. Rage may be something our people now embrace, but it is not the way of the dragons. He will... The sun was momentarily blotted out by the descending shadow of Galandavax. His gargantuan size wouldn't fit inside the clearing, and so he continued to hover above the trees. Adriel looked up at his companion, and appeared lost in thought for a time. A scout party of Darkerkin have made it past the Sandstalkers, Adriel explained. I must leave with Galandavax and deal with it. Take us with you! Gallinor shouted over the beating of Galandavax's heavy wings. Adriel looked back at his elven kin with a doubtful eye. I think it better if you stay here. I don't want us to fight here. Let us fight out there, Gallinor countered, picking up his fallen blades. Before Adriel could reply, Ilargo came bounding out from between the trees, previously hidden from view. The green dragon roared and met Adriel's questioning gaze with brilliant blue eyes. Adriel's confusion quickly turned to curiosity. It seems Ilargo wishes to take you, Gideon. The sound of Galandavax's wings was the only noise to fill the clearing, as all eyes fell on Gideon, who continued to stare at Ilargo in surprise. The green dragon didn't wait for Adriel to speak, as he did not require the elf's permission, and bowed one of his strong legs and dipped his left wing, exposing his spine. Gideon felt all control abandon him, when he walked over and used Ilargo's wing as if it were a step, and climbed onto his back. Adriel remained silent, gazing upon them from a distance. His expression was unreadable to Gideon, who struggled to find a comfortable place between Ilargo's spikes. A short roar from Glandavax reminded everyone that action was required. The great ebony dragon dipped his hovering body just enough to allow his powerful tail to drop into the clearing. Adriel moved with centuries of experience and caught a hold on the dragon's thick scales, quickly ascending the tail with the speed and natural grace of a cat, until he found his position at the base of Galandavax's neck. Gideon's neck craned, and his mouth fell open as he observed Adriel. The elf was incredibly comfortable at such a height, and the mage could only wish for such dexterity. "Wait!" Galanor shouted over Galandavax's wings. "What about me?" Ilargo exhaled a sharp sigh through his nostrils and dipped his wing again. Galanor cautiously approached the young dragon, his eyes flitting from Ilargo's big blue ones to the space available behind Gideon. Another sharp sigh told the elf to get a move on. The dragon was clearly eager to find the Darkerkin scouts. The mage offered his hand, but wasn't surprised when Galanor hopped into the dragon's back with irritating ease. "I hate this part." Gideon swallowed hard, remembering his first sickening flight holding onto Malaith's tail, and then again in the claws of Raynal after she saved them from the Sandstalkers. Before Galanor could reply, Ilargo shot into the air as an arrow from a bow. The ground dropped away, and the tops of the trees quickly became pinpoints in the distance. Gideon lost sight of the clearing and only caught a glimpse of the lake and waterfall in the heart of the reach when Ilargo banked sharply to the right and headed for the surrounding wall of the Red Mountains. The mountains lay sprawled across the horizon, concealing the flat wastes that sat wedged between Dragon's Reach and Malaesai. Gideon looked down briefly, but felt his stomach rise into his mouth and turned away. Galanor, on the other hand, appeared completely at ease with their soaring height. Indeed, it was the first time the mage had seen him genuinely smile in many days. In line with the horizon, Gideon could see Galandavax gliding on the air currents alongside Raynal, whose pale green scales glittered in the desert sunlight as if she were nothing more than a mirage. After a few minutes of flight, the mountains began to open up to flatter ground and sparse trees that offered little shade. Gideon recognized the valley where Galanor and he had been set upon by the Sandstalkers. That day would be forever imprinted on his mind. Ilargo bowed forward, allowing a better view of what they were heading towards. Gideon and Galanor adjusted their grip on the spikes and peered into the bright distance. "I can't see anything!" Gideon bellowed over the howling wind in his ears. "It's a Darkerkin scouting party," Galanor replied, closer to his ear. 30 or so to my eyes. 28, actually." Gideon heard the number in his head and had to fight the dizzying wave that threatened to steal his conscious mind. The voice had not been his own, but that of a younger man. A teenager, perhaps. The mage blinked his confusion away and kept the dizzying moment to himself. He couldn't explain what was happening to him, but he knew now wasn't the time to examine it. Galandavax and Raynal dropped into a dive, tucking their wings into their body and plummeting towards the ground with unbelievable speed. "Oh, no." Gideon knew what was coming. "No, no, no, no! Hold tight!" Galanor shouted, anticipating the same thing. Gideon couldn't help but shout at the top of his lungs when Ilargo dropped out of the sky like a stone discarded from the heavens. The mage's howl only faded when he could no longer draw enough air to make a sound. The ground rushed up to meet them, and the Darkerkin finally took shape against the desert sand. A dozen of them were riding giant lizards, while the others walked along the sides. The group bristled with spears and other pointed weapons that had been specifically crafted to inflict maximum damage from every angle. At the last possible second of their dive, Galandavax and Raynal extended their wings and flew over the top of the scouting party, breathing a line of fire either side of the caravan. The Darkerkin howled and leapt about to avoid the great beasts, while throwing spears into the air. The projectiles might have well have been moving through treacle when measured against the speed of the dragons. Ilargo's wings fanned out, dramatically slowing their descent, until the dragon's strong legs were able to take the impact as they set down at the head of the caravan. A jet of fire exploded from Ilargo's mouth and consumed the lead lizard and its rider, reducing them both to cinders. Gideon and Galanor were quick to jump off the dragon's back and retrieve their weapons, ready to battle the Darkerkin. Ilargo didn't remain grounded, but instead took off again, pausing only to dip and pick up another lizard with its rider still in the saddle. "Watch out!" Gideon warned, shoving Galanor aside. The two dived in opposite directions, narrowly avoiding another torrent of fire expelled from Galandavax's burning throat. The flames eviscerated at least 10 of the Darkerkin, and injured many more. Galanor was back on his feet in a blur of motion, with smoke rising off his burnt cloak. Through the fiery haze, the mage caught sight of the giant lizard that Ilargo had picked up. The hulking creature tumbled out of the sky and flattened a distant group of Darkerkin, who had been readying their spears to attack Raynal. Perhaps it was the heat that made Gideon think of something cold, but the first spell he unleashed upon the nearest Darkerkin froze him mid-run, until his limbs shattered from the momentum. Galanor was already leaping over motes of fire and running into the fray, eager to take his frustration out on the Darkerkin. Gideon moved to join him, watching as the elf swords shone in the desert sun before they cut through the violent savages. A giant lizard ran in front of the mage in a desperate attempt to flee the soaring dragons, who continued to drop out of the sky, talons first. In the wake of the fleeing beast, two Darkerkin appeared, as if from nowhere, with their serrated blades and spiked clubs swinging at Gideon. The young mage deftly swatted the attacks aside with his staff and countered with a swift hit and a concussive spell. The chaos of the fire, smoke, and clouds of sand had Gideon instinctively running to Galanor's side, leaving the Darkerkin to roll about the ground in semi-consciousness. Somehow, without looking, Gideon became aware that Ilargo had landed behind him and finished the two savages off. The mage was sure he could taste their blood in his mouth, and actually feel the dragon's talons sink into their flesh. He scrunched his eyes tight and shook the feeling off. As Galandavax glided overhead, Adriel slipped off his neck and dropped to the ground from a bone-breaking height. The elf, however, tucked into a roll and came up without so much as a scratch. The ancient dragon was soon at Galanor's side, though he used no weapon to beat back the attacking Darkerkin. Using a form of hand-to-hand combat Gideon had never seen before, Adriel twisted their arms and legs, breaking bones and crushing nerve clusters with the tips of his fingers. The elf could wield an open palm as well as a closed one, and deliver just as much damage, if not more. Gideon also noticed that the elf never took a life on his journey to Galanor's side. The young mage forced himself to concentrate on his immediate surroundings. Chaos continued to rule their environment, with the dragons dropping out of the sky and raining fire down upon the Darkerkin. The sounds of screams and clashing steel mixed with the yelps of giant lizards and roaring dragons. Gideon added to the clamor and unleashed devastating spells in a bid to keep the scouting party from overwhelming them. Through the fumes and smoke, Gideon caught sight of one particular Darkerkin in the distance. He was running for one of the few remaining lizards in the center of the fray, ignoring the dragons and the elves. Gideon immediately felt as if something was wrong. The Darkerkin pulled free a spear from the lizard's saddle and tore the black canvas from the weapon's head. A jagged piece of green crystal adorned the end of the spear, fastened to the wood with leather straps. Everything stopped. The sound of fire and screams disappeared, along with the roar of the dragons. Gideon felt panic rising inside him, and knew the feeling originated from Ilargo, not himself. The Darkerkin marched into the middle of the chaos and planted the spear into the ground so that the chrysalith pointed to the sky. Adriel's cry was piercing as they watched all three dragons fall from the ocean of blue sky. It was a strange sight to see creatures who flew with such finesse drop out of the sky with no more grace than a lifeless rock. Raynal managed to reach out with all four of her claws and managed to ensnare Ilargo, shielding him before their combined bulk hammered into the desert. The younger green dragon rolled out of his mother's embrace and lay limp under the relentless sun. Everyone had to run from Galandavax's mighty girth. The ebony dragon had been flying at a higher altitude and hit the ground in front of the scouts. His thick scales kicked up plumes of sand and broken rock as he skidded towards them with considerable speed. Adriel performed an exceptional feat of magical strength and pushed both of his arms out towards Galandavax. The dragon's momentum gradually slowed down, but not before he buried three Darkerkin, who had been too slow to get out of the way. Gideon looked at Adriel with awe, wondering if he would ever be able to muster the magical strength to stop a fully grown dragon with his staff. Raynal stirred to the left of the group, catching Gideon's eye. His stomach dropped. In all the chaos, they had taken their eyes off the Darkerkin wielding the chrysalith. The savage was now standing over Ilargo, with the jagged crystal aimed to plunge into the dragon's chest. Both dragons appeared disorientated and looked to be in pain, groaning and struggling to find their footing. They were powerless in the presence of the crystal. Gideon leveled his staff at the Darkerkin, but he was too slow. The savage warrior thrust the spear of anti-magic down at the dragon, but Ilargo found the last of his strength and lifted his front leg, taking the impalement there in place of his heart. Gideon released his explosive spell and sent the Darkerkin careening into the distance. The mage barely noticed the savage's death, however, when his arm erupted in burning pain, forcing him to let go of his staff and drop to his knees in agony. Pulling the leather sleeve back on his left arm, he stared in disbelief at the elongated hole in his forearm. Warm blood streaked down his elbow and soaked his shirt. Garanor skidded to Gideon's side and joined him on his knees. The elf gripped both ends of the mage's forearm and examined the wound intently, while Adriel ran by them to reach Ilargo. As the dragon cried out in pain, so too did Gideon. He could feel the healing magic that Garanor was already pouring into him, but the wound refused to knit back together. "I don't understand," Garanor stated, exasperated. "Your magic will not work as it should in the presence of the chrysalith." Adriel was trying to navigate Ilargo's thrashing. In one fluid movement, the ancient elf put one foot on the dragon's leg and pulled the spear clean from the wound. Again, Ilargo and Gideon cried out in unison. Garanor looked upon the green crystal with cautious reverence as Adriel jogged over to the nearest lizard and tied the spear to its saddle. A quick slap to the hide sent the giant beast running back to the flat wastes. Raynal was the first to recover and find her feet, so that she could once again tower over the bipeds. Galandavak stood up and shook his massive head as if he were trying to correct his vision, while his impressive wingspan flexed into the air, ridding him of the sand. Ilargo! Gideon ignored Galanor's attempts at nursing, and ran over to the green dragon with his arm cradled close to his chest. Ilargo remained on his back, and allowed Adriel to examine the wound. The elf turned the thick leg this way and that, but the mage didn't know what he was looking for. Perhaps Adriel was acquainted with dragon physiology. "I can't see any traces of the chrysalith inside," Adriel stated. The elf looked from the wound to Raynal and stepped away from Ilargo as his mother dipped her regal head. The breath that she exhaled appeared wavy, like that of desert heat on the horizon. Only this breath was profound in its purpose. The bone healed first, followed by vessels, and then strands of muscle and tendon covered it from sight. The skin knitted back together, and two dull green scales grew into place, standing out next to Ilargo's shining and gold-speckled armor. "Your arm." Galanor lifted Gideon's injured arm and marveled at the new skin and obvious lack of a wound. Once again, everyone was staring at Gideon. The mage quickly covered his arm and tried to look anywhere but at Adriel, whose inquisitive gaze felt piercing. Galandavax gave a short roar and dipped his head to look upon Gideon more closely. The ebony dragon looked at Adriel and snorted a jet of warm air over the group. What conversation had taken place between them remained a mystery.
"Most curious," Adriel whispered.
"But we must return to Dragon's Reach. This scouting party won't be reporting anything. We'll send out some patrols into the outlying areas around the Red Mountains tonight. We will discuss this further in the safety of the Reach." Adriel looked at Ilargo with concerned eyes. "It would be better if Ilargo flew home unencumbered. Raynal has offered to take you." Gideon didn't know at what point the Queen of the Dragons had made such an offer, but it was preferable to walking through the desert. The mighty green dragon took two strides towards them and stood as still as a statue. "How do we..." Gideon wasn't sure how to climb onto her back, since Raynal refused to dip. Adriel smiled. "Raynal the Emerald Star is the queen of dragonkind. You do not get to sit on her back." Before either man or elf could protest, the magnificent dragon took off from the ground, picking both up between her claws. It wasn't long after they returned to the safety of Dragon's Reach that Adriel caught up with them by the lake, in the center of the crater. Ilargo walked tentatively by the edge of the water, testing the strength in his healed leg, while Galandavax ascended one of the floating boulders and relaxed, allowing his long tail to hang over the lip. Raynal stood proud before Gideon and Galanor, making it clear that they weren't to stray until Adriel had finished speaking to them.
"Is this the first time you've shared an injury with Ilargo?" Adriel asked, pointedly.
Gideon hesitated under the questioning.
"No, I hurt my leg when Malaith fought with him, but it healed within a day."
"What else have you shared?"
Adriel asked. Gideon looked to Galanor for support, but the elf appeared just as interested in the answer as Adriel.
I've heard some thoughts.
Gideon turned his statement into a question as he felt completely out of his depth.
Anything else? Adriel continued.
Gideon thought of the pull he had felt to Mournblade, but he wasn't sure how it could be connected to the strange events of today. His expression betrayed him, however, and Adriel could see that there was something else.
I've never used a sword in battle, but...
Gideon wasn't sure how to explain it.
But I am drawn to Mournblade more and more.
Adriel glanced at Raynal for just a moment.
Have you tried to pull it from the stone? The elf asked, casually.
Yes, but nothing happened. Adriel looked away and slowly paced the shoreline, his expression unreadable. A light breeze blew his blonde hair and robes out behind him, carrying a sweet scent to Gideon's nose. The elf turned on his heel and met Raynal's vibrant blue eyes as if she had spoken to him. Adriel asked,
When Maliath was on Corcanith, did you ever experience such connections?
Gideon thought about it for a moment.
No, never.
I would remember something like this. The first time I heard Ilargo, I thought I was going to pass out.
Again, Adriel and Raynal locked eyes, and a moment of silence passed between them.
Without warning, the green dragon bowed her head until her mouth was only a foot away from Gideon's face. He could smell the blood and flesh of the giant lizards she had torn apart in the desert, and he changed his breathing to use only his mouth.
"Stay very still," Adriel warned, sounding alarm bells in Gideon's head.
Raynal inhaled a deep breath, so deep that Gideon feared his skin would be pulled from his face. The dragon exhaled softly and returned to her regal posture without incident.
"There's no elf blood in you," Adriel explained. "If there was any elf in your ancestry, Raynal would know."
"Wait, are you saying what I think you're saying?"
Galanor stepped forward, scrutinizing Gideon with new eyes.
Gideon took in every detail of Adriel's silent reply, and still couldn't read his expression. Galanor, on the other hand, appeared to have got stuck somewhere between shock and awe.
"What?" Gideon pleaded.
"You're..."
Galanor couldn't find the words.
"You're a..."
"Dragorn, Gideon," Adriel said softly. "You're the first human Dragorn."
Gideon's mouth attempted to ask a thousand questions at once, but instead he mustered only a stunned silence.
Ilargo walked through the shallows and came to stand by his mother on the bank, his beautiful eyes fixed on Gideon.
"I'm not an elf," he finally managed. "Only elves can be Dragorn."
"Only elves have ever been Dragorn," Adriel replied with a hint of a smile. "There is an important difference."
"Wait." Galanor held up his hands. "The first human Ilargo ever meets, and he happens to be a Dragorn? I don't believe it."
"You're not required to believe it," Adriel said in his usual calm voice. "It is very unlikely that many humans would qualify to become Dragorn, given the chance. They discovered that opportunity themselves, however, when Gal Tian went to war with the dragons."
The elf looked over the mage, as if examining his essence.
"Gideon is a relatively empathic person, making him susceptible to a dragon's form of communication. And he's a mage, a magical being by human standards."
Gideon was completely bemused.
"I'm a... Dragorn!"
The familiar voice rang clear in his mind, and he knew instantly that it was Ilargo. Once again, the presence inside his mind threatened to rob him of consciousness. Galanor quickly caught him by the arm and steadied him with strong hands.
"Easy," Adriel bade, closing the gap between them in a second.
"Much training is required to master even the basics of being a Dragorn." The elves took Gideon by the arms and helped him to a nearby log, where the mage was convinced he was going to be sick.
"Can you train a human?" Galanor asked, skeptically.
"It has never been done before."
Adriel stood back from Gideon, taking him in, but that doesn't mean it cannot be done.
It took Gideon a minute to realize the area around the lake and the floating boulders had suddenly filled with dragons of every color and description. They were all looking at him. What began in the back of his mind as a collection of whispers quickly drew into a chorus of new voices that filled every space in his head, until he could no longer think of a single word himself. The edges of his vision blurred and soon turned to elliptic shadows, masking the details of the world.
"Ilargo!"
Adriel's cry was distant, despite his close proximity. Gideon felt the world gently slip away under the weight of so many voices and memories, which were not his own, pressing into his mind. Another moment, and there was only darkness.
Chapter 20. Ever Southward.
Nathaniel stared in wonder at the centaurs as they prepared the companions' horses for their journey. The older centaurs combed their manes and sang soft melodies to them, while the younger, smaller centaurs combed their coats. The saddles and various belongings were adjusted to make it as comfortable as possible for the horses. Indeed, they had paid more attention to their riders than the humans. The same could not be said of their attention to the elves. The centaurs had practically worshipped Rayna and Phelan during their time in the camp. The young knight couldn't blame them either. The elves were certainly captivating. As if their knowledge and wisdom wasn't fascinating enough, their very presence held a magical aura. With everyone prepared and ready to travel, the group waited by the edge of the camp with all eyes on Phelan's hut. Asher emerged first, looking as fierce as ever, with his new double-handed sword adorning his belt. Combined with the short swords on his back and the Arrakash bow attached to his quiver, Nathaniel was thankful to be the ranger's ally and not his enemy. Asher held the leather strips aside to allow Phelan to walk out into the sunshine, closely followed by Rayna and the much taller Zastus. Nathaniel ran a critical eye over Phelan and was elated to see that she'd recovered well. The care, as well as the medicinal herbs from the centaurs, had brought the elf back from a sleep from which the knight had feared she might never wake. Asher's proximity to Phelan didn't go unnoticed either, as well as the concern on his usually expressionless face. Phelan turned to Zastus and the gathering centaurs. "Thank you for your hospitality. Without your healing, I would not be standing before you." The elf took Zastus's hand in her own and squeezed affectionately. "It has been an honor to receive the El Shinnai," Zastus replied warmly. "My ancestors passed down the stories of your great race and the fruitful times you brought to the moonlit plains. We only hope that the El Shinnai will return for good." "Oh, they're returning all right," Nathaniel thought sarcastically. "We have sent word to the other tribes," Zastus continued. "You will have no trouble on your journey to the arid lands. You have the eternal gratitude of the El Shinnai." Phelan bowed her head. "But it will not be necessary. I have one crystal left with enough power inside to reach Karath." Asher stepped into her view with the same concern etched across his scarred face as Rayna. "Are you mad? You have only just recovered from the first portal," Rayna added with a softer tone. Phelan raised a hand to silence any more protests. "Time is not our ally. We must reach Karath, resupply and journey to nightfall before Paldora's star graces the daylight sky." Nathaniel recognized the quote from the Echoes of Fate, as well as the comet's connection with ominous calamity. Despite aspects of the prophecy proving true, the knight couldn't believe that a phenomenon that had only ever been witnessed at night could be reversed. Zastus towered over the group. "I would find another route to your journey's end. Smoke rises from the southern cities. War has claimed those lands. Our time in the desert must be as short as possible," Asher explained. "Traveling from Karath is our only chance. If we forego civilization and take the eastern road to nightfall, we will be exposed to the harsher elements of the arid lands." "We will go to Karath," Phelan continued. "I will have us there, but in a few steps." The elf moved in front of the rangers and removed a crystal from her belt. Hadavad and Atharia broke free of the group and approached Phelan. The old mage rested a hand on her shoulder. "You have our strength this time," Hadavad offered. "And mine." Rayna hurried over and placed a hand on Phelan's free shoulder. Phelan flashed a curt smile and nodded her head, a hint of resignation on her face. Nathaniel guessed the elf wasn't entirely back to health. Rayna turned to the centaurs. "Thank you for your hospitality, Zastus. The generosity of your people will not be forgotten by the El Shinnai, or the humans." Zastus bowed his head. "Until our paths cross again, princess." Phelan threw the crystal and opened another portal, large enough to fit the riders and their mounts. Nathaniel covered his eyes when the portal sparked to life, but he took note of the large red gem that slipped out of Hadavad's tunic. The gem glowed a brilliant ruby red as he offered Phelan his magical strength. "Ride!" Asher shouted, encouraging the rangers to make for the portal before the magic was drained. Torin awoke with a start and sharp pains in his ribs. Having succumbed to his injuries and fatigue, he had fallen asleep sometime around dawn. The Son of Nun was sitting, curled up, on top of a roof in the heart of Carath. His leather armor and black cloak were covered in splatters of blood, and he knew that there wasn't enough of it that belonged to the Arrakesh. The owl mask lay at his side, broken and bent out of shape after taking a beating from Nakia. A jagged line cut through the mask from above the left eye down to the right cheek. Tentatively, he touched his face and felt the identical cut that would forever scar his features. Torin couldn't bring himself to look at the mask, for the shame threatened to consume him. The white owl cautiously shifted his position and felt everything ache. Taking a punch from an elf was not something he could ever have prepared for. Torin groaned, as if he were an old man rising from his chair, and stood up to take in the city. Carath should be weeping for its loss. The House of Owls had fallen in a single night. The few who stood for freedom and a better way of living had been cut down in the night like animals. And yet the city went on. Torin looked around the streets below, with confusion and heartbreak marring his face. The markets were in full swing, with fresh produce and goods being sold as if it were any other day. Further down the street he could hear slaves being sold openly for the first time in months. Carathans walked the streets with their slaves in tow, fearing no reprisals from the owls. He had been tricked by the elves, by Argo. Torin felt his rage rising to the surface at the thought of the treacherous assassin. He took a moment to think of all the things he would do to the Arrakesh if he ever saw him again. Those bloody images only led him to think about Halion. What tortures was he being exposed to today, if he was even still alive? There was a very good chance the elves had killed his brother by now. He had to find out, and if he could, rescue him. The blood on his hands caught his attention and shifted his focus. The blood belonged to Brago. His brother from the streets had been stabbed by Argo, only feet away from the White Owl, and yet he had been powerless to stop him. Torin had failed in so many ways. Looking out over the rooftops, Torin focused on the buildings to the south. Before he did anything else, his only course of action would be to see who survived last night's massacre, to see if Brago yet lived. The White Owl stopped, before leaping the gap between the buildings, and looked back at the mask on the floor. He sighed through the pain and bent low to pick it up. The empty eyes of the mask that had become his identity looked back at him. There was nothing in it anymore. The mask no longer filled him with confidence and strength, but only served to remind him of his blind arrogance and worthless rage. As the White Owl, he had achieved nothing the elves couldn't undo by the next new moon. Torin could hear Salim's calming words of patience, but he didn't have the strength to shut them out. Torin released the mask and turned away, not even bothering to watch it tumble across the rooftop. He was done with it. Instead, he used the breathing techniques Salim had taught him and launched himself across the gap between the buildings. The pain in his ribs and the ache in his muscles were almost overpowering, but he pushed on, never slowing or giving himself a moment to rest. The midday sun had passed by the time he found the rooftop he was looking for. At the top of the three-story building, canvases stretched between poles to provide shelter from the sun. Dozens of owls sat around in the shade, nursing each other's wounds. Torin felt only shame when he leapt the final gap and landed amongst those he had failed. To his surprise, the men and women he had come to consider family embraced him and thanked the gods that he was still alive. He felt many hands clasp his shoulders and grip his armor in affection. He didn't deserve it. That feeling was compounded when the group dispersed, and Torin saw Brago for the first time. "You're late," Brago rasped. Torin hurried to his brother's side and dropped to one knee, so that he might better take the measure of his wounds. He was sickly in color and clammy to the touch. His pale skin was cold but sticky with sweat, and Torin could smell the blood. Pulling back the blanket, the Son of Nun could see the mortal wound that spelled Brago's fate. A sword through the belly was a slow death, painful too. It wasn't befitting of a man who had given his best years to fighting for others. "I had to be sure I wasn't followed," Torin explained. He couldn't look Brago in the eyes for any length of time without finding his own filling with tears. This wasn't how it should have ended. Right now they were supposed to be announcing to the city that the old ways had come to an end. There would be freedom for all, and a new, fair hierarchy would take over the arid lands.
Pesky assassins!
Brago attempted to laugh, but his face contorted into agony.
Save your strength, Torin pleaded.
I sent some of the others to check on Mother Madakiai and the children, Brago sputtered.
Torin felt more shame overwhelm him. He hadn't thought to check on the woman who saved him from the streets and put a roof over his head. Again, more proof that he wasn't fit to lead the House of Owls. Being trained how to fight by an honor guard wasn't enough to qualify him for the role.
What became of Halion?
Brago asked. Torin dabbed the sweat on his brother's forehead.
He was discovered by the elves.
Torin couldn't help the venom in his tone. The assassins tortured him for information.
Animals.
Brago scrunched his eyes and strained his neck in pain. Torin looked around and did a quick head count. There were so few left. How many lives had been lost because of his plan? It would take time to calculate that number and learn who had never made it to the rendezvous.
There are more inside, Brago explained, following Torin's gaze. And more should be arriving from Tregaron later.
The sentence went unfinished as his pain intensified.
Rest, Torin ordered. What will you do now?
Brago finally managed. I must find a way to free Halion, if he still lives. Torin looked back out at the city and saw the palace that dominated the cityscape.
No, Brago replied.
Halion has given his life to this cause, as so many others have. The Darkerkin are still coming.
Scylla's gate must not be opened.
Brago's expression of horror focused Torin. If the House of Owls does nothing, this city will fall, he continued, fighting through his pain. After Karrath is theirs, the arid lands will fall next, and from there Ilion will be... Again, the pain was too much. Torin looked at his dying brother and saw everything he should have been. Brago saw past the horrors that lay in store for Karrath and looked to help the entire realm. How could Torin continue without him? Without Halion? Brago used what little strength he had and gripped Torin's leather armor.
You must hold the gate, brother.
His bloodshot eyes filled with tears.
Take whoever is willing and hold that gate.
Brago's eyes appeared to look through Torin, who could only wait for a breath that never came. The son of Nun shook his oldest friend and called his name with a fool's hope. Only Brago's glazed expression remained. Torin fell into his brother's chest and wept for his loss. When his despair gave in to denial, he thumped Brago's chest with anger, commanding him to wake up. Through his pleas, the other owls crowded around him and laid their hands on Torin's shoulders. They offered their strength and shared the grief, relieving Torin of his anger.
You were the best of us.
Torin gently closed Brago's eyes and let his hand fall onto his brother's chest. The white owl lost track of time, sitting on the edge of the rooftop, watching the world go by beneath his dangling feet. The others had taken Brago's body inside and called for Mother Madakiai. If she was inside with him now, Torin didn't know. He looked up and stared out at the undying mountains to the south. Scylla's gate was only the size of his thumb from here. The sun was kissing the horizon when Torin felt a hand on his shoulder. Mother Madakiai looked down at him with red-rimmed eyes and an expression of deep sorrow. She wept for every one of them, not just Brago. The mother stepped aside to reveal the crowded roof. He had been so lost in thought that he had shut himself off from his surroundings and missed their arrival. There are more downstairs, Mother Madakiai explained. Bowing her head, she whispered, They have come to hear you. Torin slowly stood up and glanced at the sea of faces before him. He knew them all. At some point or another, they had all sparred with him and received one-on-one training. There were so many faces he couldn't see, and the thought nearly crippled him. He didn't know what to say. For the first time since he had started this crusade, Torin had no words of encouragement. The flame that ignited his rage was gone. That rage had driven him ever onwards, for as long as he could remember, guiding him and keeping him strong. Now it had brought only grief. Brago's last words had echoed in his mind for hours, accompanied with the image of his last breath.
Our brothers and sisters have been taken from us, Torin began. I have failed you all. He held up a hand to cut short their protests. An ancient evil has taken a hold of this city, but something worse is coming. Torin glanced at Scylla's gate. Any day now, an army of Darkakin will march on those gates and sweep through this city like a plague. Slavery will become a way of life for everyone, not just those of us in the south, but everywhere. The northern kingdoms don't even know they're coming. The line must be drawn here. Torin looked at Mother Madakiai and felt his heart break, knowing what his proposal would do to her. She had already lost so many of them over the years, and now he was going to march to a certain death, maybe taking the rest of the owls with him. She would have to mourn them all before the end. Mother Madakiai lightly gripped his forearm. You don't have to fight. Her alternative would be to run and hide. Ilin was a big place after all. The mother didn't care about honor or doing the right thing. She just wanted them to live. I had been fighting to survive since I was born, Torin replied lightly, taking her hand in his own. Now I'm fighting for everyone else. The white owl turned back to the crowd. I am going to those gates. I will hold them for as long as I can. I won't ask any of you to join me. As one, the entire crowd stepped forward, and the sound of feet, rhythmically stamping on floorboards, resounded from the floor below. Their courage and loyalty brought tears to his eyes, but he held on to them. We are with you. It was Kali who spoke on everyone's behalf. The dark-haired warrior was a capable fighter and had proven herself a leader time and time again. Brago had always spoken highly of her. Torin knew he could rely on her, as he had his brother. The white owl nodded his approval and appreciation. Kali, find our best runners and have them get word across the city to anyone who will listen. Karath must be ready to flee should we fail to hold the gate. We leave at high moon. Torin! Torin! The call came from the adjacent roof, where two owls could be seen running towards them. The crowd made space for the runners to leap onto their roof. They were exhausted and desperate for breath, but their look of dread and despair had Torin searching the cityscape for assassins. Brothers! The white owl crouched by their side. The palace! The first exclaimed. Halion! The other whispered. Torin's eyes filled with tears when he understood the expressions on their faces. Without a word, he jumped between the buildings and ran for the heart of Karath. His feet pounded relentlessly against the dusty rooftops, drowning out the sound of the city below. The Son of Nun didn't stop until he found himself panting for breath opposite the palace slave markets. He dropped to his knees at the sight. There were other owls behind him, but he hadn't noticed them following him. They were all just as stunned by the sight of Halion, hanging from one of the lower balconies, with his hands and feet bound. His body was just as beaten and broken as Torin remembered, with streaks of blood dripping to his toes. Torin didn't have enough energy to feel rage. He had lost Brago and so many owls. Now Halion was gone. So many thoughts rushed through his head, but the numbness that overtook him could not be penetrated. The gravity of what had happened, of the loss, was slow to sink in. Torin's stomach flipped when he thought of Salim, Halion's father. Exiled from these lands, Salim would never know of his son's fate, and yet Torin felt a responsibility to tell him. But he hadn't seen his old mentor for years, and wouldn't even know where to start searching for him. Look! Kali gazed down at the base of the palace. Torin followed her sight, and found a group of Karathan soldiers huddled within the grounds, staring up at Halion's lifeless body. Looking around, the Son of Nun discovered more soldiers outside the grounds, forsaking their duties, and simply staring at Halion. Kali. Torin called without taking his eyes off Halion. Have word find its way into their ranks. A single tear reached his lips, leaving a salty taste in his mouth. Let the soldiers know that Scylla's gate has been manned once again. Is that wise, Torin? Halion spent years convincing his men of our cause. We will see the strength of their mettle. The Son of Nun knew he should get up and make straight for Scylla's gate, but he couldn't tear himself away. He would have to keep looking at Halion until he believed it was real. Nathaniel stood at the top of the rise, with his hands resting on his sword belt, as he looked out on the arid lands. Karath,
the capital in the south, sat on the horizon, its high walls too small to hide the rising smoke in the moonlight. War had certainly plagued the city, though Nathaniel found the war to be a worthy one. Slaves fighting for the right to live under the Ilian sky as free people was a battle he would have gladly joined, had he still been a fully-fledged greycoat. It seemed life outside of that vocation was just as dangerous, if not more so. The knight gripped his sword tight at the thought of entering Nightfall's dark halls, not to mention the pit.
"First time in the desert?"
Asher came from nowhere, as he always did. Nathaniel tried not to show his alarm. "I've had the misfortune of visiting the arid land several times, actually. There are monsters aplenty in these parts." The ranger sighed and inspected the walls of Carath.
"It's the monsters inside the city that bother me."
"So shouldn't we be finding a way in now, then, while it's dark?" The lightest of smiles pulled at Azure's lips.
"You're still thinking like a knight. You're not wearing that coat anymore. If we approach Carath's gate at night, we'll have arrows raining down on our heads before we state our business. We wait until day. Everyone is less suspicious under a blue sky. Besides, Felim will need the night to recover."
Nathaniel trusted the ranger's expertise in the matter. As a student of Nightfall, Asher had come to understand the way people think, and especially their perceptions, since these were the very things he had to manipulate. In some ways, the knight felt sorry for the older man, having lived so long with such an outlook.
"How is she faring?" Nathaniel asked.
"The spell was less taxing, thanks to Hadavad and the others, but she still needs to rest. Surviving on the other side of those walls isn't easy."
"You're an assassin of Nightfall. Can't you just sneak in?"
Nathaniel asked with a jesting tone.
"Oh, I could sneak in, sure," Asher replied, playing along. "But sneaking 9 more people in is beyond my skill. I kill monsters these days. I'm not a magician."
Nathaniel chuckled. "I'm sure even the Magikar of Kor'kanath couldn't figure out how to sneak Doran Heavybelly into Carath." Both men shared a laugh and continued to stare at the foreboding city under the dome of stars above. In the quiet that followed, Nathaniel found some of his curiosities rising to the surface.
"You having real friends in the world aside, and we will circle back to that, what's the truth behind Hadavad? I can't believe he's as old as his tales would claim."
Ash was massaging his index finger, where Paldora's gem had once sat.
"Why not? I'm over 1,000 years old.
And I wouldn't have believed that had there not been an explanation," Nathaniel countered. "He certainly looks old, just not 500 years old.
I've learned not to ask. Hadavad is very guarded."
Nathaniel inspected Asher's features and was sure he could see a crack in the ranger's usually impenetrable expressions.
"What are you not saying?"
"You have nothing to worry about, Nathaniel. Hadavad's motivations have always been virtuous, more so than any other I've met. I understand them all in some way, but there's too much mystery surrounding him, almost as much as there was around you. Have you seen the gem around his neck, the ruby one? It's like no crystal I've ever come across."
"I've seen the gem," was Asher's only reply.
Nathaniel sighed, resigned to the fact that the ranger would give nothing more away. After another moment of silence, Asher spoke without ever taking his eyes off Carath.
"When I first met Hadavad, I was still in Arrakesh. I was young then, hunting one of my earliest targets in Kelp Town."
"Did he appear as old as he does now?" Nathaniel asked.
"It wasn't his age that I found so striking, though he was certainly younger."
Asher turned to the knight.
"It was the color of his skin."
It took Nathaniel another moment to truly understand what Asher was trying to say.
"He was somebody else?"
"He looked like somebody else."
The ranger waved his hand.
"Like I said, I've learned not to ask." The sound of Doran's armor preceded his stout appearance.
"Are you two requiring a moment, or are you joining us for an ale and a tale?"
The dwarf laughed deep in his belly, as he always did, and trotted off back to the group. Asher placed a heavy hand on Nathaniel's shoulder.
"I can provide the ale, if you can provide a tale."
Nathaniel smiled, happy to see a lighter side to Asher. A side the other rangers appeared to force out of him. "Life as a greatcoat never leaves one without a tale or two." The two began to walk back to the group. "I'm still not satisfied with your answers."
"Neither am I,"
the ranger casually replied, leaving the knight to ponder on the mystery that was Hadavad. Nathaniel found camping with the rangers to be far more enjoyable than when it had simply been the four of them. The fire was bigger, the last came from the belly, and the food was better. Doran was very particular about his meat and the way it had to be cooked, while Hadavad and Dotharia ensured the fire never died. They were awash in the glow of the moon and enjoying each other's company for most of the night. Phelan was wrapped in blankets and sat close to the fire under the watchful eye of Asher. Nathaniel smiled with a full stomach and watched Rayna beside him as she examined her bow. The knight had noticed the princess inspecting Adelam's magical bow several times since she had taken ownership. He knew the elf was loath to wield a weapon that had been used to kill so many. It was just another reason he was so drawn to her. "Asher," Selim announced in the firelight, "it has been too long since I tested my skills against a worthy opponent. It would be an honor." Doran's head swiveled around in offense. "He sparred with me not 5 days ago," he spat. Asher stifled his laugh and looked over Phelan with a critical eye, but the elf nodded him on and even offered a brief smile. "The honor would be mine, Selim," Asher replied curtly. Glade shuffled over and sat next to Nathaniel and Rayna by the tree, his dark, bald head reflecting the firelight. "You're in for a treat," Glade said in hushed tones. "I saw Asher in the Battle of Westphalian," Nathaniel explained. "He held back hundreds of Arrakesh." "That was battle, war, survival even," Glade continued. "This will be closer to a dance. Art in its own way, really. The honor guards of Karath might be the only warriors in Ilion that can match an Arrakesh." Nathaniel took offense and gave the ranger a hard stare. "No offense intended," Glade smiled warmly. "The Greycoats are a force to be reckoned with, but they are peacekeepers. Your training is too broad and diplomatic. Honor guards are trained to attack and kill with swift efficiency, like that of an assassin, only they use those skills to protect their emperor." The ranger's explanation didn't completely redeem him, but Nathaniel's interest was certainly piqued. He turned his attention to Selim as he removed his sword from its scabbard and tossed the sheath aside. The blade was thin and of moderate length, but the guard was black and sloped down toward his hand, providing cover from stray blows that might relieve him of any fingers. The southerner stood very still and waited for Asher. The old ranger removed his cloak and left the short silver and magical blades with Phelan. His new double-handed sword made a satisfying sound when it came free of its scabbard. Asher stood as still as Selim, with his sword tip resting on the ground. Nathaniel looked around the camp and noted everyone's attention was on the two fighters. He was sure that Doran and Bale were placing bets between themselves. Even Rayna put down her bow and watched closely. The two warriors lunged at each other at exactly the same moment. Their clash of swords was momentary and brief, as both danced around the other with feigning attacks and stances designed to put the other off. Selim's sword worked more like that of a spear, jabbing and thrusting, forcing Asher to evade or push the weapon away. In the blink of an eye, Selim was inside Asher's arm and bringing his elbow to bear. The ranger was knocked backwards with enough force to take him off his feet, but at the last second, Asher turned it into a roll and came back up with his sword ready. "Not used to the weight," Asher grunted, hefting his new sword. "I believe it is identical to your old one," Selim countered with a sly smile. After a couple of twirls to get a feel for the blade, Asher lunged forward and executed a series of moves that Nathaniel found hard to follow. Luckily for Asher, so did Selim. The old honor guard dashed about with incredible reflexes, but it wasn't enough to hold off the ex-assassin. Asher performed an intricate spin of his sword while locked against Salim's, and sent the smaller blade flying into the air. The ranger held his sword at Salim's throat for just a moment before stepping away, allowing the southerner to catch his sword before it hit the ground. Glade chuckled to himself. "I never get tired of watching these two fight. I once had the pleasure of rooting out a nest of hydras with them both, many years ago now. They fight each other with incredible skill, but together they are a force to be reckoned with." Nathaniel felt jealous in that moment, and he didn't know exactly why. He had fought alongside Asher many times now, and considered them to be quite the pair. It was a silly and petty thing to qualm over. Nathaniel hadn't known Asher nearly as long as any of the rangers, especially Glade, yet he felt the bond between them was stronger. The knight turned to Glade. "How is it you and Asher came to know one another?" Glade looked down at his chest with a furrowed brow. "He stopped me from doing something foolish," The ranger looked into the roaring fire and stroked his white moustache. In your days as a greycoat, did you ever come across a Vorska? Nathaniel had indeed come across the wretches, but only during his training and with a more experienced greycoat by his side. Unlike most of the monsters that lurked in the shadows, Vorska had the ability to appear human at night. Their true hideous form was only revealed in the light of day, forcing them to live in caves on the outskirts of towns or cities. After the sun had set, they would hunt their prey openly in the very streets in which they lived. The worst aspect of the Vorska was their wicked tongue, designed to suck out their victim's blood and leave behind a toxin that transformed the victim into a new Vorska, adding to their clan. As a student, I helped to track one down in Dunwich, Nathaniel explained. Very elusive and extremely hard to catch at night. The real trick is finding one and tracking it back to the nest. Glade rested his head against the tree. Before I turned to this life, I was a tailor. I know it's hard to believe. I had my own shop in Bleak. Nathaniel was already feeling sorry for him. Nobody wanted to live in Bleak. The town fell within the reach of the cursed land of the Icefales, just north of Elathia, and not too far from the Wild Moors. The people who lived there were constantly under threat of being attacked by outlanders from the moors. I had a beautiful wife and two gorgeous girls. Glade took a moment to chew over his next words. Two Vorska followed them back from the market and left them in an alley. By the time I found them, my wife was already succumbing to their venom. I killed her myself. Nathaniel felt Rayna's hand squeeze his knee, and he looked at her to find fresh tears in her eyes. It was because of stories like this that he became a greycoat. My rage drove me to madness. It was the kind of rage that can only end in self-destruction. Glade looked over to Asher, who was still fighting Salim. That's when he found me. Asher had been tracking them as well, and he found the cave before I did, thankfully. I was about to enter their lair and die, taking as many as I could. Could you imagine how well that would have gone? I'd be dead in seconds. How did he stop you? Rayna asked. The same way he stops everything. He hit me really hard. Glade laughed to himself. When I woke up, he convinced me that there was a better way to kill monsters like that. He took the time to teach me and show me a few of his tricks. What happened to the Vorska? Nathaniel asked. We killed them all, together. It took some time and some planning, but when we returned to that cave, Glade had a faraway look on his face. I put my rage away and embraced a new life. There was a pause before the ranger spoke again. You should ask Doran how he came to be in Asher's debt. Now there's a story. The fighters came to an abrupt stop, with Salim down on one knee and Asher standing over him, with his broadsword pointing down at the southerner's head.
Ha! Doran yelled into the night. I told you he'd get the better of him. Pay up, laddie.
The dwarf held his hand out to Bale, who begrudgingly dropped 4 coins into it. Glade cleared his throat and pointed at the fighters, drawing the group's attention to Salim's sword, which was currently angled upwards towards Asher's chest. The barbarian snatched the coins back from the dwarf with a smug grin.
Bah! Always ruining me fun, Doran shot at Glade.
Glade laughed along with the mages and even Asher. Nathaniel didn't quite believe that Asher had drawn with Salim, especially after seeing him fight at Westphalian. The knight kept the thought to himself, not wanting to insult Salim, however. The two fighters embraced forearms and complimented the other's talents. Asher was quick to return to the fire and check on Phelan, who had watched silently from within her blanket. Nathaniel looked from the pair to Rayna with a questioning look, but the princess could only offer a shrug in response. The knight was about to comment on how odd they were together, before a moment of introspection warned him of being a hypocrite.
We should rest now.
Hadavad was standing at the edge of the light, resting against his staff. Evil stirs in the south. His vision was fixed on the darkness, towards Scylla's gate. Our journey to nightfall will not be easy. Nathaniel looked at Rayna and hated the fact that they were knowingly walking into danger. They would all have to fight for their lives before any of this was over.
Chapter 21 An Approaching Storm. Under an ocean of stars, the King of Elves walked up and down the beach of the Opal Coast.
Between the moonlight and the torches planted in the sand, Elim was able to survey his fleet of ships,